Welcome back to Condor Currents, the podcast that flows through the latest in computer architecture research and RISC-V innovation. I'm Ty Garibay, president of Condor Computing, and we have a great episode lined up for you today. This episode is brought to you by Condor Computing Minus High Performance RISC-V Processor IP from Andes Technology, the world's leading RISC-V processor IP provider with 30% market share and over 12 billion SoCs shipped. Learn more at condorcomputing.com. Today, we're diving into some really fascinating research. We're looking at how modern CPUs with matrix extensions stack up for LLM inference workloads, and we're exploring the game theory behind disaggregated inference architectures. On the news side, we've got some incredible RISC-V milestones to talk about, minus 25% market penetration. Trace Asanovich weighing in on the state of RISC-V and a great mentorship story from Ventana Micro. Let's get into it. All right, first up on the research side, we have a paper titled SME Pilot, Characterizing and Optimizing LLM Inference with Scalable Matrix Extensions from Faiyang Chen, Haibo Chen, and colleagues out of the archive. This one is right in my wheelhouse, and I think it's going to resonate with anyone who's been watching the convergence of AI workloads and general purpose CPU design. So here's the setup. Modern CPUs, and we're talking about high-end server chips here, are increasingly shipping with dedicated matrix execution hardware baked right into the processor. ARM Scalable Matrix Extension, or SME, is the prime example the authors are working with here. The idea is straightforward on the surface. Matrix multiply operations are the core primitive of neural network inference, so why not add specialized hardware to accelerate them right inside your CPU? Sounds like a win, right? Well, here's where it gets interesting. The authors point out that LLM inference is not a monolithic workload. It's actually a collection of very different computational patterns that happen to be chained together. You've got the prefill phase where you're processing the entire input prompt, which is incredibly compute dense. Then you've got the decode phase where you're generating tokens one at a time, which is much more memory bandwidth bound.
And then layered on top of that, you've got attention mechanisms and KV-cache operations, each with their own distinct arithmetic intensity and memory access patterns. Think of it like this. Imagine you're running a restaurant kitchen. Your matrix extension unit is like a giant industrial grill, incredibly powerful for cooking large batches of steaks. But if most of your orders are actually for individual appetizers, side dishes, and salads, that giant grill is overkill and your bottleneck shifts elsewhere to the expediting window, to the prep line, to your refrigerator throughput. The SME unit and the scalar CPU cores are competing for the same memory bandwidth, and that shared resource creates contention that can actually undermine your gains. What SpeedPilot does is provide a systematic characterization framework, essentially a detailed profile of which LLM inference operations actually benefit from SME acceleration and which ones don't. They break down the mismatches between what SME is optimized for and what these diverse inference operations actually demand.
And crucially, they don't just stop at characterization. They propose optimization strategies that account for these mismatches. For computer architects, this is really important work because it highlights a fundamental design tension. When we add specialized execution units to a CPU minus, and this is something we think about constantly here at Condor Computing, we have to be honest about the trade-offs. Adding matrix execution hardware increases die area, increases power budget, and creates new pressure on shared resources like memory bandwidth and cache. If the workload doesn't map cleanly to that hardware, you're potentially paying the cost without getting the benefit. The insight here extends well beyond just ARM SME. We're seeing similar questions arise with RISC-V matrix extensions, the B extension, the vector extension, and various custom accelerator proposals. The lesson from SME Pilot is that you need to deeply characterize your target workloads before you commit silicon area to specialized execution.
You need to understand arithmetic intensity. You need to understand data layout requirements, and you need to model how your new unit competes with existing resources for bandwidth. The authors also highlight the KV cache problem specifically, and I think this is underappreciated in a lot of architecture discussions. The KV cache in transformer inference grows with context length, and managing it efficiently requires very different memory access patterns than the matrix multiplies that SME is built for. So you end up in this situation where your matrix unit is sitting idle during a significant portion of inference time while your memory system is being hammered by cache operations that don't benefit from the matrix hardware at all. This SME Pilot is a really solid contribution to understanding the CPU's AI accelerator space as LLM inference moves down the stack from massive GPU clusters toward edge devices and on-device inference. Understanding how to efficiently use CPU matrix extensions is going to matter a lot.
This is definitely a paper worth reading if you're thinking about processor design for AI workloads. Check the show notes for links.
Okay, let's move on to our second paper, which takes a completely different angle on LLM inference. We're leaving the CPU microarchitecture world and stepping into the realm of systems architecture and, believe it or not, game theory. The paper is The Price of Anarchy in Disaggregated Inference by Athos Georgiou and colleagues. Also from the archive, this one is intellectually fascinating and has some really practical implications. So disaggregated inference, let me explain what that means if you haven't encountered it. Traditional LLM serving runs the prefill and decode phases of inference on the same GPU or pool of GPUs. They're co-located and share resources. Disaggregated inference architectures physically separate these two phases onto distinct hardware pools. You have a prefill pool and GPUs dedicated to processing input prompts and a decode pool GPUs dedicated to generating output tokens. NVIDIA's Dynamo system, which the authors use as their concrete case study, is one of the real-world implementations of this approach. The motivation for disaggregation makes sense at first glance.
Prefill is compute bound. Decode is memory bandwidth bound. So why not dedicate hardware matched to each workload's needs? But here's the problem the authors identify, and this is where the game theory comes in. When you separate these pools, you've now created two competing agents that are fighting over a shared hardware budget. Prefill wants more GPUs, decode wants more GPUs, and the allocation between them directly impacts the performance and cost of the entire system. The authors model this as three coupled games. First, a two-player resource game between the prefill and decode pools. Second, a selfish caching game over the KV cache, which in disaggregated systems often becomes hierarchical, spread across different memory tiers and potentially different physical locations. And third, a congestion game that captures the network and interconnect intention that happens when you're moving tensors between physically separated pools. Now, here's where the title of the paper becomes clear.
In game theory, the price of anarchy is a measure of how much worse a system performs when each agent acts selfishly to optimize its own objective compared to the globally optimal outcome where someone coordinates everything. It's a quantification of the cost of self-interested behavior in a shared system. Think about rush hour traffic. If every driver selfishly picks what they think is the fastest route with no coordination, you get traffic jams that make everyone worse off than if routes were intelligently allocated. The price of anarchy tells you exactly how much efficiency you're losing to that selfish behavior. And the fascinating finding in this paper is that disaggregated inference architectures are fundamentally susceptible to this problem. The prefill and decode pools, if allowed to optimize independently, will reach equilibria that are suboptimal for the overall system. For computer architects and systems designers, this is a really important result because it tells you that the hardware architecture choice, disaggregation, creates an economic and game theoretic structure that has real performance consequences.
It's not enough to just split your workloads across physically separate hardware. You need coordination mechanisms, scheduling policies, and resource allocation strategies that account for the competitive dynamics between pools. The KV cache angle is particularly interesting to me. In disaggregated systems, the KV cache can't just live in one place anymore. You've got GPU HBM, CPU DRAM, and potentially even NVMe storage in a hierarchy. When multiple decode workers are all trying to reuse cached KV entries, you get a selfish caching problem where each worker wants to evict other workers' entries to make room for its own. The paper formalizes this and derives bounds on how bad this can get. What I love about this work is that it bridges the gap between hardware architecture and distributed systems theory. As we build more complex, disaggregated inference infrastructure, and this is the direction the industry is clearly heading, we need analytical frameworks to reason about these emergent behaviors. You can't just simulate your way to understanding a system like this. You need mathematical tools that give you bounds and guarantees.
For the RISC-V community specifically, this is relevant as we think about building open, disaggregated inference hardware. The architectural choices you make about how to partition, compute, how to structure your interconnect, and how to manage shared memory resources all have game theoretic implications that this paper helps us reason about. Really thought-provoking stuff. Check the show notes for the link to this one as well. All right, let's shift gears to the news, and we're starting with a story that honestly just made me smile when I read it. This comes from RISC-V International, and it's a personal essay from Animesh Agarwal, a developer and RISC-V mentee who did a placement at Ventana Micro. The title is RISC-V Mentorship Taught Me the RISC-V ISA is far more than a reference manual. I love this story because it captures something that I think every experienced architect knows intuitively, but that's hard to communicate to someone who's just starting out. The RISC-V specification documents are incredible. They're well-written, they're modular, they're precise.
But reading the spec and actually understanding how to build a production RISC-V processor are very different things. There's a whole universe of knowledge that lives in the heads of experienced engineers and gets transmitted through mentorship, through code review, through design review meetings. Ventana Micro is doing serious risk. Fivework, they're building high-performance application class processors, the kind of chips that go into data centers and networking infrastructure. Having a mentee embedded in that environment, working on real toolchain and ISA problems, is exactly the kind of experience that accelerates development of the RISC-V talent pipeline. What Enemish's story highlights is that the ISA is really an interface, a contract between software and hardware, but the richness of that interface only becomes apparent when you're actually implementing it, writing compilers for it, debugging subtle corner cases in privileged mode, or figuring out how your vector extension interacts with your memory model.
The reference manual tells you what the rules are, but it takes real engineering experience to understand why the rules are structured the way they are and what happens when you push on the edges. This is something we care deeply about at Condor Computing and Andes Technology. The RISC-V ecosystem is only as strong as its engineering talent base, and that talent base doesn't grow automatically. It grows through programs like this mentorship initiative. When you have experienced RISC-V architects sitting down with new engineers and walking them through the real-world complexity of the ISA, you're building institutional knowledge that will pay dividends for the entire open silicon community for years to come. I'd encourage anyone listening who is early in their architecture career to look into the RISC-V international mentorship programs. And for companies building on RISC-V, consider investing in mentorship and internship programs. You're not just helping an individual, you're strengthening the entire ecosystem. Really inspiring story. Check the show notes for the link. Next up, we have a major statement from one of the founding fathers of RISC-V itself. Krishtreya Sanovich, one of the original architects of the RISC-V ISA and a co-founder of RISC-V International, has published a blog post titled One ISA Infinite Use Cases, RISC-V and the Road to Workload-Specific Silicon. And his message is clear: in 2026, the state of the RISC-V union isn't just strong, it's stronger than ever. Now, when Krishtreya talks, people in the architecture community listen. This is someone who has spent decades thinking about ISA design, who helped make the foundational decisions that gave RISC-V its modularity and extensibility, and who has watched the ecosystem grow from an academic research project into a global industrial force. So when he says the trajectory is stronger than ever, that carries real weight. The framing around workload-specific silicon is really the key insight here, and it's something that I think is genuinely transformative about the RISC-V model. For most of computing history, ISA design was dominated by a small number of proprietary players, and you had to accept the trade-offs they made for their target markets. RISC-V changes that equation fundamentally.
The modular extension mechanism means you can take the RISC-V-based ISA and customize your processor for the exact workload you're targeting. Are you building a tiny embedded controller for an IoT sensor? RISC-V scales down to that beautifully. Are you building a high-performance server chip for machine learning inference? RISC-V scales up to that with vector and matrix extensions. Are you building a real-time control processor for a safety-critical automotive application? RISC-V's deterministic execution model and customization capabilities are a great fit. One ISA, truly infinite use cases. What this means for the silicon industry is profound. We're moving from a world where you had to choose between two or three proprietary ISA options, each optimized for a different market segment, to a world where you can compose a processor architecture from open, standardized building blocks. That lowers the cost of custom silicon dramatically, it reduces design risk, and it enables a much larger community of engineers to contribute to advancing the state of the art. At Condor Computing, this is precisely the vision we're building toward.
Andes Technologies processor, IP portfolio, is built on this philosophy: high performance, customizable RISC, 5 processor cores that can be tuned for specific applications. The fact that Crest is articulating this vision so clearly and confidently in 2026 tells you that the RISC-V community has moved well past the will this succeed question and is fully focused on execution. Check the show notes for the link to Crest full post. It's worth reading in its entirety. And finally, the news that I think is going to be the headline everyone in our industry is talking about. Tom's Hardware is reporting that RISC-V is set to announce 25% market penetration, and critically, this is ahead of schedule. The open standard ISA is securing a fast-growing silicon footprint that is genuinely reshaping the processor landscape. 25%, let that sink in for a moment. 1 in 4 processor cores being shipped in silicon today is running RISC-V. That is an extraordinary achievement for an instruction set architecture that didn't even exist outside of Berkeley until a little over a decade ago.
To put it in context, it took x86 decades to achieve dominance, and ARM took many years to build to its current position. RISC-V is moving at a pace that the industry has rarely seen, and the fact that it's ahead of schedule is particularly significant. This isn't a market share projection that was made optimistically and is barely being met. RISC-V adoption is actually accelerating faster than even the optimistic forecast suggested. That tells you something important about the momentum. There's a self-reinforcing dynamic happening where more ecosystem support drives more adoption, which drives more investment in the ecosystem, which drives even more adoption. What's driving this? Several things converging at once. First, the geopolitical dimension is real, minus companies and countries that want silicon sovereignty are very motivated to build on an open ISA rather than being dependent on proprietary instruction sets controlled by specific companies. Second, the AI hardware boom is creating massive demand for custom silicon, and RISC-V's extensibility makes it an excellent foundation for domain-specific accelerator designs.
Third, the cost of licensing proprietary ISA technology is substantial, and RISC-V eliminates that cost entirely. The 12 billion SoCs shipped with Andes Technologies RISC-V processor IP alone tells you something about how deeply RISC-V has penetrated the embedded and automotive and IoT markets. And as we push into higher performance compute, data center edge, AI, high performance computing, the trajectory is clearly pointing upward. For anyone who was still skeptical a few years ago about whether RISC-V could achieve meaningful market share against entrenched incumbents, 25% penetration ahead of schedule should settle that debate. The question now isn't whether RISC-V will matter, it already does. The question is how quickly it continues to grow and which market segments it captures next. My bet is on continued acceleration. The foundation is solid, the ecosystem is thriving, and the momentum is undeniable. That's a wrap on today's episode of Condor Currents.
We covered some fantastic research from how CPU matrix extensions perform across the diverse demands of LLM inference, to a game theoretic analysis of disaggregated inference architectures that should make every systems architect think differently about hardware partitioning decisions. And on the news side,